of the CS, Section 11. As I understand it, the school board... Section 7. I'm sorry. 7-11. Let's roll. Okay, the judicial review, as I read this, you would have the decision by the school board, then you would have the arbitration, and then that record would be appealed to court. I guess we would like to see that the administrator in charge of that particular tenured teacher would make a recommendation, and the recommendation, say in this case, would be non-retention, then submit that recommendation for non-retention to the teacher. Based on the recommendation, the teacher has a choice as to whether they go to arbitration or not. Then conduct the arbitration after the award is rendered. Then give the option to the school district or the teacher, then to submit it for a court review. And I know we've talked about an amendment that we think accomplishes that, and then also accomplishes the arbitration under the procedures that are established in the state law. So if you see an amendment, it's not that we're... I think what we're trying to do is just clarify the process. Recommendation, arbitration, decision, and then, you know, if the school district is not happy with the decision, I would assume they ought to have the latitude to appeal, or we have the latitude, or the teacher have the latitude to appeal to the... Yes.
From my understanding, you're saying that you want the arbitration to come a step sooner. That the unit administrator says we're not going to retain, then arbitration, then the school board says no, we're not going to retain, and then either party goes to court.
Right. Because I guess I don't understand, if the school board reaches a decision unfavorable to a teacher, is that a hearing? Are we talking about an administrative hearing?
I think that the school board is the one that really does the hiring and firing, not the principal. The principal recommends, then the school board does the hiring and firing. So now the school board has gone through whatever the internal policy of that district is to come to non-retention,
right,
and then arbitration, then judicial. So I guess I don't see the need to do it principal first, then arbitration.
Well, I mean, that's an area where, you know, I guess we can agree to disagree. What we would recommend is a recommendation made by the principal after they've gone through all the procedures that are prescribed in the statute. Get the recommendation. Say if it's adverse to the teacher, they have an opportunity to request arbitration. After that award is rendered, then I guess the school board could look at what the administrator has recommended plus what the arbitrator has indicated, then they make a decision relative to... It's kind of like, will they undo a decision that they made early in the process?
I see where you're going. The school board then may or may not back up their principal, and I think it's probably naive to think that they wouldn't, but I'm disinclined to get into the internal politics of the district of how they get to the point of non-retention. But after they get to the point of non-retention, then I'm concerned about protecting rights,
right,
of both the district and the teacher. When you're finished, I would like to put the question to Mr. McPheeters, if we could, as far as the role of the principal in this.
Right. And then the last point is, we do support Section 8. I think it is important that we not change the rules in the middle of the game for a lot of employees.
As an ex-military person, I've always wanted to be able to give someone a Section 8.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You can explain that among your non-military friends when you get a chance. Mr. McPheeters, would you join us, please? Section 8 was a discharge from mental unfitness.
I kind of see it as housing myself.
Yeah, it's like military.
I was wondering.
We digress here. Mr. McPheeters, for the record.
Just for the record, I'm Steve McPheeters, Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators.
Yeah, did you want to make some general comments, or could I just simply direct the question about Section 7 to you?
The only general comment I would make would be on the peer review. And that is a concern, the fact that as opposed to a university setting. When you have a public school setting, you have all the teachers in the classroom. They're all working, and it's if you're going to pull three of them out to go into another classroom, we're going to have to come up with substitutes, which indeed there's a cost involved in that, and districts would have to know that and budget for it. Hopefully, there would be money there to allow that to happen. But if you talk about a tremendous number of non-tenured teachers going through this process, it could be rather expensive for districts. That would be my only concern.
Thank you. Regarding Section 7, do you understand what we've proposed here and
yes,
what
I do.
Mr. Marshall has proposed?
Yes, I do, and I would have to agree with your proposal on this issue. The seems to me the chain of command, the due process of how things, as we perceive them, to work as an administrative point of view. We do in most cases, a very extensive investigation of a particular teacher who may be on the brinks of having a problem. And we always do it for the improvement of instruction. And at some point in time, in a two-year time, it gets to a point where we find that there's not any opportunity for this teacher to be able to be a good teacher, and we would have to make the recommendation for that person to not be extended a contract. You are correct in the fact that we recommend to the school board. The school board does do the official hiring and the firing. It seems to me that it is our position as an administrator to take the evidence to the board for them to examine and for them to feel comfortable about making that ultimate decision. And at that point then, after that decision has been made, then you come into your arbitration that you're speaking to in your CS for this piece of legislation. I do not see how it would work to have a third party opinion at the level of principal teacher level, and then have that third party opinion going to the school board. It seems to me that it's the school board's responsibility to examine the evidence, and then if indeed the evidence has been found in the favor of the district, then the third party is called in, and that's when you call in your arbitrator.
Thank you. Questions from Ms. McKeeter, Representative Tuohy.
Right. You said to have three teachers evaluate the tenure possibility. Is there any absolute reason why you have to have all three together? Why you can't pick one teacher a day or one a week and do this over a month period?
Oh, you could, but you're still having three teachers coming in and out.
But
well, I mean, three teachers would be three times you're having to have somebody coming in the classroom, so you still have three positions to find substitutes to take their place.
Right.
Yeah, so you're still, whether you have all three of them in there at one time versus having all three of them extended over a variety of times, you still have the ultimate problem of filling the slots while that teacher is in. I'm not saying it's not a good process. I mean, because I know that peer evaluations are conducted in certain school districts and they can be a productive thing. I'm saying, though, that to completely do a thorough analysis, you still have to have your administrative responsibility to be in there evaluating that person at least twice for the year according to the regulations, and it's just good practice, as well as putting your peer evaluation to it with it. And put all that together, you should be able to come up with a pretty good package to go to the superintendent for a recommendation.
Let me comment that, for the record, that my intent would be to leave the district have flexibility, but I would think that this evaluation would be best served by an evaluation was spread out periodically over the year's time, I could easily envision that a half an hour per observer three times throughout the school year.
I'd have to disagree with that one. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. To really do a thorough evaluation and to really get a mood of what's happening in the classroom, you've got to be in there much longer than a 30-minute period of time. You've got to watch the kids come in. You have to see how the teacher greets the children. You have to see how they get organized, their classroom. You have to watch the atmosphere. You have to walk in and you know, at different times to observe your classroom setting. Is it a learning environment? It does take much more time than...
I understand that. However, those atmospherics, I think, occur throughout the year. Again, my contention is go to any teacher's lounge during lunch, and if they trust you, you will know who the teachers are that are earning their $30 a week.
If they are, they're not in the teacher's lounge.
Well, at, during lunch. When they still had duty-free lunch.
At 2 o'clock or at what?
Yeah. No, what I'm saying is by working together as colleagues, they're in and out of each other's rooms in the primary level and whatever, and they have a pretty good perception of what's going on, and this additional observation is gilding the lily, if I might. But, thank you. I appreciate your observations. I'm sorry to demote you. Mr. Rose?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You had a comment to make about
yes.
this discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For clarification and possibly to improve, the issue of evaluation and peer committee, is there, for interpretation reasons, observation, evaluation, can we interpret this to be satisfied if you include mentorships?
Oh, absolutely.
So we have some room. I mean, if you have a mentoring program, does that qualify as evaluation and observation as well?
Absolutely.
So then that does give us some latitude to work in. So I just wanted to make that point because we have some concerns with the cost. But if we can include that through our in-service professional development mentorship type of an effort rather than simply observing, I think we might have some room to work in that area.
And for the record, again, it would be my hope that this would grow into a mentorship kind of program. But again, I don't want to specify that because of the costs that might be involved.
Once again, if we were going to move into that area of observations, if mentorships would be credited with it as an observation or evaluation, I think we have some latitude to work. So,
yeah, I think mentorship is much more important and valuable than observation, just pure observation. All right, I would like to close public testimony. We have some proposed.
Have you accepted the work?
We need to accept the work draft, and then we have some proposed amendments. And Representative Davis?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the work draft /K for CS for House Bill number 217 as a working document.
Any objections? Hearing none, we have before us CS for 217 as our work draft. Representative Robinson? Would you like to present your amendments?
I would love to. Okay. Amendment number one is on its way. I'll move amendment number one, and I was going to object for it.
Yeah, we're trying to be expedite the thing.
Right.
Okay, and if you'd speak to your amendment.
Through the chair, obviously this is a pretty simple amendment, just changes the year from, 3 to 4, from 4 to 3, and again, as was stated, in the testimony that... the normal period of time that's used by most of the states is around 3 years. And I just kind of felt that, in the spirit of compromise and as we're trying to make some movement here, that I just kind of thought that it would make a lot more sense to, go for the 3 years. If I understand it, it would be actually a fourth year before the teacher would actually, receive tenure. And I just felt that this was a little kind of in between the 5 and the 2 and kind of 3, and believe it will be in the best interest of the state to go with that number, and also just not to put ourselves far out over and above other states.
Thank you, Representative Robinson. I will speak against your amendment with all due respect in that the 4 years was an attempt on my part to compromise in this being the art of the possible down here, and knowing that in our research from one side said, well, we could possibly go to 3, the other side's asking for 4, and I mean 5, and so we end up in the middle with 4, and knowing that there could possibly exist somewhere in the dark side legislation that is even less well thought out than ours, I think that it would be wise if we stayed with the 4.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davis.
If I might ask the maker of the amendment, it appears that lines 16 and 17 of the amendment are addressing a different issue, if you might speak to that.
Well, I'll have to look here.
It's page 2, line 22.
Yeah. That's when it says, it currently says a peer review committee shall submit its evaluation in writing to the superintendent only, and this is
right.
adding,
You're right.
and to the non-tenured teacher.
And Representative Robinson, if you could divide the question and make line 16 and 17 a separate amendment, make that amendment number 2.
What if we maybe make an amendment number 3 just because, amendment number 4.
Number 4, if you make that amendment number 4, I wouldn't have any objection to that.
Okay.
Okay, I'll just, we'll leave that part off. One other thing I just want to say, you know, that I think, you know, part of my concern here is that, you know, and generally speaking, when you go to work for other, you know, agencies and those sort of things, most of the time, you know, your probation period is anywhere from 6 months to a year. And, you know, I already know of people here who put in, you know, a year service as teachers, got their pink slip, and if I understand the tenure system again, are going to have to wait, are going to have to start all over again. And because of the economic problems that our state's facing right now, I also really believe that a lot of these teachers, unfortunately, are going to put in far longer period of time than what's been done in the past to actually get their tenure. And that was the other reason I felt that it made sense to go with a compromise of 3 years instead of the 4.
I understand your goal. I am trying to compromise your goal with those who want no tenure.
The darker side, I understand. Okay.
And so if we, Becky, if you would take the roll, please.
Representative Bundy.
No.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Robinson?
Yes.
Representative Toohey?
No.
Thank you. Amendment number 1 fails. Could we have amendment number 2, please?
Yeah. Amendment number 2. I'd move amendment number 2.
Object.
Do we have the amendment? Oh, here we
are. Just on general principles.
We're trying to save you some.
Hey, I don't mind. You know, and again, through the chair, I don't know if you are willing. I was kind of hoping, I know that you've cut off the testimony, but even myself would like to know what
we can certainly ask questions.
Yeah, I mean, each group thinks about it. Amendment number 2, it just kind of really clarifies and makes a little bit more specific the layoff section. It provides for a greater, you know, clarity relative to financial situations that may result in layoff of tenure teachers. Establishes financial exigency as a reason for layoff, ensures districts will attempt to implement other budgetary reductions before they actually, you know, do the layoff. It also requires verification at the financial exigency by a neutral third party. It also clarifies and provides for the fact that the teachers are to be notified by March 16th, and it also states the use of seniority to lay off tenure teachers and requires districts to decide recall provisions through local bargaining. And fourth, it provides for fifth-year recall rights and restricts districts from reemploying teachers until tenure teachers who are laid off or recalled. And number 5, it just defines the layoff section of that.
The impetus of this bill originally was to give districts a little more flexibility, and I think inserting a bargaining unit in there is going to not give the districts the flexibility they want. But you did ask that we have folks comment, and Tom Wright's here from Representative Ivan's office. Do you have a comment on the amendment, Tom?
Not at this time, Mr.
Okay,
Chairman.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, we did like the language that you drafted, the layout language, and I think that is sufficient.
Thank you.
Short comment?
Anybody else like to comment? We'll assume that's a positive comment from Mr. Marshall.
And I know Carl and Steve just got it, so I don't know if they had.
I'm going to assume a negative comment from Mr. Rose. And I'm reading the mind from this far away. And I understand, again, your goal, again, not wanting to win the battle, lose the war. I'll object to the amendment. And Becky, would you take the vote, please?
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Robinson?
Yes.
Representative Toohey?
No.
Representative Bundy?
No. And so amendment number 2 fails. We will now address amendment number 3.
Right.
Representative Robinson?
And this section is, I'll move amendment number 3.
Object.
And this is, of course, the arbitration section. And primarily, it just, again, does a better job of spelling out, provides for arbitration kind of as it follows. You know, the tenured teacher receives notice of dismissal or non-retention. The tenured teacher then can request within 15 days of the receipt of the notice of non-retention. Number three, an arbitration hearing is arranged and conducted. Number four, arbitration decision is reached and a decision is furnished to the employee or employers within 10 days of this decision. Number five, the employee or employee may apply to, you know, the court. And number six, you know, the court conducts a judicial review. So again, it just, I think, clarifies and gives a little bit more clarity to the issue.
If you'll give us a minute here to
no
go
problem.
Through it. Short amendments, you know, are nice.
It's kind of short if you take all the other stuff out.
Okay. Representative Robinson, under arbitration under AS 0943010, is that advisory arbitration or mandatory or binding?
I thought it was binding, but
then
I may be.
It just outlines.
Mr. Marshall?
That, it really is that part of the statute that just deals with arbitration. This is not binding arb, but it does allow, and the appeal that is provided for relative to line 7 on page 2 of the bill is basically, it's a low threshold issue. We're not actually going through a new hearing or anything like that. We're actually going through a process where you either confirm, vacate, modify, or correct the award. But it's, as our legal advisors have pointed out to us, you know, there are certain standards prescribed in the statute that would be looked at by a judge, and such as, you know, was the arbitration held in a timely manner? Was there any real strong, you know, malfeasance conducted by, say, the arbitrator? But it is prescribed, and I'm sorry I didn't bring a copy of 0943110, but it does, in a sense, specify, and it's just basically procedural checks. It is not a rehearing of the, you know, of the, well, actually the dispute that, you know, occurred before the arbitrator.
Representative Robinson, this is, I guess, more than I want to chew on today. I am on judiciary, and I will review your amendment more thoroughly, and if I feel like I could have voted for it here, I will present it in judiciary.
Okay.
And but at this point, I'm going to oppose it.
Okay.
Just because it's too much for me to assimilate it at this time.
I appreciate that you take it to the next committee.
Becky, could we have the vote, please?
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Robinson?
Yes.
Representative Toohey?
No.
Representative Bundy?
No. And that brings us to amendment number 3 fails. That brings us to amendment number 4.
And I'll move amendment number 4, and good news is I think I'm going to get this one.
and don't you dare object. Are there objections to amendment number 4? Hearing none, amendment number 4 is adopted. All right, we have before us then CS for House Bill 217 as amended. The wishes of the committee.
Move that we pass this on to its next committee of referral, which I believe is Judiciary, with a zero fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
No object.
And we have an objection. Could we have the vote, please?
Representative Robinson.
No.
Yes.
And so House Bill 217 has moved from the Hess Committee. That brings us to...
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I would just like to thank you for your work in the subcommittee, and Representative Ivan also appreciates all the work you put into this bill, and we wish to thank you.
Well, and would you take our wishes for his good health?
You bet. Thank you, sir.
I may be in the water or something, but they're starting to drop like flies around here. And Richard Foster went to the hospital, too.
They're all back out.
Yeah, I know they're out.
But I don't have any more.
Fortunately, I don't think we have a mental hospital around here, so the rest of us are safe.
Are we done?
One more bill, and with my thanks to the committee's incredible patience, that takes us to House Bill 172. It's a bill that we have heard before and does... expand Alaska's mandatory school system to include kindergarten, and also provides for legalize what some of our schools are already currently doing, and that is using the middle school concept. We have two people here to testify on House Bill 172. Dee Hubbard, all the way from Anchorage.
Thank you.
For the record, your name, please.
My name is Dee Hubbard. And I live in Representative Barnes' district. I thought that I would give you all a chance to see who really instigated this whole thing that you're dealing with. I started work on this about 2.5 years ago because I was concerned about kindergarten possibly being eliminated in school districts when the state looks at kindergarten as a permissive grade. And I felt that because of the the amount of time and money that is being spent on early education, if we had a school district that decided not to provide kindergarten, we would have the early education, we would not have a kindergarten, and then we'd go into first grade. And my concern was for the continuing education of children. So I did do some initial work on this. The Alaska PTA did endorse a resolution requesting that kindergarten become a required grade in this state. The other item had to do with the middle school, because we do have two districts that currently offer middle school starting at grade 6. And I thought it would be nice to get it cleaned up so that we make sure everyone is legal. It's never been my intent to push that middle schools have to be grade 6. I think that's a huge discussion that has to go on at individual school district levels. But I thank you for taking the time to do something with this. I like the other cleanup language that you've done in the bill.
Well, thank you, Dee, for getting us started in the right direction. It's nice that you can be here at the beginning and perhaps at its birth.
Thank you.
Mr. Marshall also would like to comment on 172.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we support the bill. We feel we could even take it a step further. Kindergarten ought to be a mandatory program in Alaska, but minimally it should be offered, and if we are seriously entering times when cuts or even being entertained, we should not cut the opportunity of kindergarten kids. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other testimony for 172? Sheila? No? Okay. We'll close public testimony. Discussion in the committee? Concerns? Questions? The will of the committee. Representative Robinson.
Well, I think it's a good bill. I have no problem with moving it, and I don't expect that. Representative
Tuohy
has a question, though, so.
Representative
Tuohy. We already have mandatory, or we have kindergarten, correct?
It's not mandatory.
But it is just customary, then, we're saying.
customary, but in times of budget cuts, if a district chose to cut out kindergarten, there's nothing to keep them from doing it. This would require them to offer kindergarten.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question. Is there a school district in the state that does not offer kindergarten in their schools? Would there be a hue and cry from the Department of Education if they did?
If they cut out kindergarten?
Yes.
Let the record reflect that that's Sheila.
I'm sorry, Sheila.
Sheila, would you come a little closer? We just can't let you get away with it. That's fine.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tuohy, would you mind asking that question again?
The question was, would there be a hue and cry from the Department of Education if there were school districts that did not offer kindergarten?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tuohy, yes, I presume that the Department of Education would be very concerned if a school district did not offer kindergarten. However, since it's not in statute and it is not mandatory, we would not be able to do anything. I mean, we could certainly express our concern, but that would be a local decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The wishes
Thank
of the committee, please. Representative Robinson, I've been waiting for you.
I'm so excited. I'll move House Bill 172 with individual recommendations.
And
how do I get to
accompanying zero fiscal notes. All right. Any objections to moving House Bill 172 from this committee? Hearing none, House 172 is moved. With thanks to all that testified, if there's nothing more to come before this committee, we stand adjourned at 4:15. Enjoy the sunlight.